You're listening to the Queen of Manifesting Podcast. Welcome to the Queendom. In this podcast, the Queen of Manifesting herself, Kelly Walker, will teach you how to manifest everything you need to live your purpose at a higher level. And now, your Queen, Kelly Walker.
Hey, it's Kelly Walker, the Queen of Manifesting, and I have a special guest today. I know you guys love it when I bring people on that know different things than me, and this man knows a ton of stuff. So I'm really excited to bring you today Stephen Campbell, who is going to talk to us about all kinds of interesting psychology bits and pieces and whole picture with changing the way we look at ourselves, changing the things we can manifest because we change our self-image. So, Stephen, welcome.
Thank you for having me. This is going to be fun.
This will be a fun time. Yeah, so much fun. Well, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background and how you got into this amazing topic?
Well, my background is actually computer information systems, and that's where my master's is, but I got a master's because I want to teach. So I got a master's when I was 55 and began teaching, and lo and behold, I found myself teaching beginning classes for beginning students in universities, how to study, how to take notes, etc. And I am a passionate follower of cognitive psychology. I have been for 30 years, so my library is packed with books like this. So I began putting psychology into these classes. And at one particular university, the president noticed that when students took my class at the very beginning, they wouldn't drop out. And when I was teaching the class, retention went up to like 93%, something outlandishly high. So I taught that for many, 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 many years. And then I retired in 2008, but I expanded that to businesses, hospitals, retirement facilities, and I found myself teaching all over the world. Why? Because the message is so exciting, and the message is simply based on this. While I'm talking to you, Kelly, you're talking to yourself thousands of times faster.
Yeah.
How can you do that? Well, when I talk to you, I use words, and when you talk to yourself, you also use words. But when we talk to ourselves mainly, we're using pictures and feelings.
Interesting.
So the first time I saw my wife, Mary, or the first time I saw Yosemite, I could not possibly put into words what I was feeling and what I was seeing. So I look at Mary now, and I can't possibly put into words what I feel about her. So you're talking to yourself far faster, but here's the most important point, and this has turned psychology on its ear and has helped thousands. Ready? Here we go.
Ready.
While you're talking to yourself, your brain is believing everything you tell it without question.
Ew. Right?
That's scary.
It is scary.
And that's wonderful. The scary part is that according to Chet Helmstetter, most of what we say to ourselves, Kelly, is negative crap.
Yeah.
Up to 75%. I thought I was the only one, and it turns out I'm not. So when we make a mistake and we say, oh my gosh, I'm so stupid, our brain says, oh, okay. Yeah, you know, you really are. But the sad part is that we lock onto that message and the brain rewires itself, called neuroplasticity. And those messages over time become a mindset, and then they become a part of who we are. So that's the scary part. Here's the wonderful part. When we make a mistake, we say, that was really dumb and stupid, but that doesn't mean I'm stupid.
Ooh.
It simply meant I was tired, I had my mind on other things, I wasn't thinking, but that doesn't mean I'm stupid. And when you say that, the brain says, oh, okay, I believe you. Now, here's the exciting part. Don't get, well, you have got me started, so it's your fault. what if what you're saying is not true? Did you know that your brain doesn't even care?
Yeah.
Your brain never even asked that question. When I heard that in a psychology class years ago at UC San Diego by Dr. V.S. Ramachandran, I was really skeptical. And he wrote a wonderful book called Phantoms in the Brain, written way back when. Phantoms refer to phantom limbs that have been amputated.
Ooh.
And a patient will go into a doctor's office, he'll say, you gotta help me, I can't do a thing with my arm. And the doctor may say, well, that could be because I cut off that arm 6 months ago. And the patient says, you didn't tell my brain that. My brain still thinks it's there.
Oh my gosh.
I can feel my arm. It gets itchy and achy and cramps up, and I don't know what to do. He told an amazing story, Kelly, of a woman, and this is true. We have the actual medical records. This happened back in 1932, the Great Recession, the Great Depression, okay? A woman by the name of Mary Knight walked into a doctor's office, Dr. Martin, who's an OBGYN in Manhattan, 32.
Okay.
She was very pregnant, very excited. This is her first baby. And she said, my husband has been out of work, like 25% of Americans were back then. I have not been able to get into a doctor. I think I'm going to deliver very soon. Would you please give me an exam to make sure that everything is safe? Because this is my first baby. And he said, absolutely. So I gave her an exam. And everything was normal, except for a couple little hiccups. Her belly button was still an innie. Not an Audi.
Oh.
And he could not find a fetal heartbeat.
Oh.
She wasn't pregnant at all.
What?
He had a condition called pseudocyesis, which is false pregnancy. It does not happen too much here in America, but in some third world countries it does. She had the big breast and the big belly and the sway back position, the abdominal fat, but she wasn't pregnant.
No.
What does he do? Well, he lied to her. He said, you're right, you can deliver today. We don't have time to get to a hospital. I'll deliver you right here. I've got everything we need, nurses, doctors, warm blankets, the whole thing. So we got her nice and comfortable. In fact, so comfortable she fell asleep. When she woke up, he said, was right there with her. He said, I'm so sorry, but we lost the baby. And I know this is heartbreaking to me, to you. The medical records indicate that as soon as he said that, her belly began going down. But she bounced into his office a week later, just as big as before. And she said, doctor, you forgot to deliver my twin. The brain believes everything. So let's go back. When we mess up and we say, I'm really stupid, the brain says, okay. Yeah, you're right. You are, because I believe it. You say it, I believe it. But when we say, you know what? I'm really smart. I was just tired. The brain says, yeah, you really are. Let me share with you a story that illustrates this whole thing. For the first 42 years of my life, I said to myself, I'm really dumb. I'm stupid. I'm not athletic. I'm just no good. Da, 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 da. And of course, when I said that, my brain said, yeah, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right. The brain rewired itself. I had the wiring of a really stupid, dumb guy. Okay. But in the 1970s, I discovered computers. Oh, my goodness. So I began taking them apart, putting them back together. This is way before the Apple, and having a great time, went back to school, got a graduate degree in computer science. And I began teaching computer courses and really having a great time. The dean came to my office from one particular college. And he said, one of our math professors just quit, Steve. So you are our new math professor. I can't teach math. I can't. And he said, you want a job? Learn. There's the book. Next semester, you're teaching university math. Well, I needed the job. So I ran down to the Roanoke Park Library. And I picked up all the books I could on brain-based learning, how the brain learns. That's how this whole thing started. And so I began teaching math based on how the brain learns, which I'll share with you in a second. And students began saying, oh, you're such a wonderful math teacher. I love that you make it fun and you make it da-da-da. And what I began doing, Kelly, is I began listening to those students. rather than what I've been saying to myself for 42 years. Did you know physiologically, okay, physiologically, that the part of the brain that's recording what others are saying to you is the same part that's recording what you're saying to yourself? You hear me? Let's say it again. The part that's recording what others are talking to you about is the same part that's recording your self-talk. So as far as the brain is concerned, what you're saying to yourself is just as important as what others are saying to you. That's why I tell people in my presentations, what others say to you do not become a part of you until you agree with them. What others say to you do not become a part of you until you agree with them. So let's go back. Okay. So I began teaching math, having a great time, and I ended up writing two college textbooks. And what do you think? Wow. Computer software and math. Okay. So what happened was, when I began teaching math and having a great time, I began saying, my goodness, I'm really good at this. And my brain said, oh, okay, yeah, you know, you're right, you really are. And the more I taught it, the more fun it was. My brain rewired itself, neuroplasticity, and over time, teaching math was as natural as falling, doing anything.
Wow.
And I became an amazing math teacher. Now let's take this a step further. That's the positive. Here's what can happen with the negative. I ended up teaching math at the University of San Francisco, and a student came to my office after the first day of class, sat down, very shy. She said, Mr. Campbell, I'm really glad you're my professor. I said, why? Why is that, Susie? She said, because I have never gotten above a C in a math test. I am a C student. So just warning you, don't feel bad. The best I'm going to do in this class is a C. And I said, well, you know what, Susie, I used to be the same way. So let me work with you. So I worked with her. She got an A in the first midterm. I gave her the test and she absolutely freaked out. She went,
that's awesome.
And then she said, oh, Mr. Campbell, this is a mistake.
Oh, no.
What do you mean, Sue? She said, I have never gotten a vote in a math test. You must have made a mistake. And I said, I didn't, Sue. I graded this myself. This is an A. So then she looked at it longer, and then suddenly her face lit up, eyes got really big, and she said, do you know what this means? And of course, gosh, I'm getting excited. So I sit down next to her. I say, of course I do, but I want you to tell me, what does this mean? She said, Mr. Campbell, this means that when I flunk the next test, I can still maintain my C.
Oh my gosh.
I said, Sue, just get an A on every test. She said, I can't. Why? Kelly, what was her answer? I'm a C student.
I'm a C student.
And that's exactly what happened. She flunked the next test. She got a C in the course.
She manifested
it. So I sat down with her. I said, Sue, answer me this. What would have happened if you had flunked this first test? Do you know? Well, you already know. What did she say, Sue? What did she say, Kelly? What would happen if she said, easy, I would have sounded like crazy in the next test. I'd have to maintain my C. And I would.
Yeah.
I said, Sue, just get an A in every test. She said, oh, I can't. Why? I'm a C student. I've always been this way. This is the way I was raised. This is what I look like. This is what I cannot do. This is where I fail. This is where I get stuck. This is the way I am. Kelly, do you know when your old life ended? Do you know when? It ended 1 second ago.
Right.
When did your new life begin? 1 second ago.
Yeah.
Now do the math. 60 seconds per minute, 60 minutes per hour, 24 hours per day. In one 24-hour period, you have 86,400 new opportunities for new life every single day.
Wow.
All you have to do is choose. It's a choice. Cognitive psychology. Choose to take them. But here's the exciting part. You keep choosing this new stuff, and this new stuff becomes a part of the way you think. Now, people say to me, you know, Steve, I'm 85, I'm 90, I've always thought this way, I can't really grow, this is the way it is. So let's talk about how much the brain can learn. I think as I use PowerPoint for that, but I'll explain to you. So I'm gonna teach you and your followers how we learn physiologically. It's gonna be a physiological lesson for the next awesome. 2 minutes, okay?
Yes.
We have two daughters, Abby and Sarah. And when Abby was being raised, Mary, who was an educator, said to me, we gotta teach Sarah about the city. Because we raised her in Roner Park, which is a little enclave about 60 miles north of San Francisco. So I said, okay, so I'm an academic. So I read Abby a book about the city, okay? And then we took her to San Francisco and Oakland, and we showed her buildings and cars and lights and fire engines and all these sorts of things. And so she recorded all this stuff during the day. Now, here's how her brain works. When she went to bed that night, here's how our brain works. This is how your brain works and my brain works. First of all, just before she goes to sleep, her brain says, oh, wonderful, great, wonderful. Leave me alone now for the next 8 hours. Because now what I have to do is take all the stuff that you learned during the day, and I didn't have the time to process it because you give me too much stuff. Like the brain has about 80,000 thoughts per day. Don't ask me who counted them, but that's according to the American Science Association. So during the day, the brain's recording all this stuff, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you're, all this stuff. But during the night, when you finally go to sleep, the brain says, okay, now I need to make sense. So here's what it does. During the day, when you learn new stuff, the brain creates little neural clusters of neurons under the prefrontal cortex, okay? So they're all under here, okay? So the fire engine, the book, et cetera, so the brain's recording all this stuff. At night, when you go to sleep, the brain says, okay, now leave me alone. It looks at all the stuff that you learn and it looks for similarities. It looks for relationships. It looks for connections between those little clusters. So here's a book about a city. Here's a book about a city. They're not connected because I wrote them. I read them to her during the day. So the brain said, I need to connect these two things. So it creates a little connection between those two clusters, synapses, dendrites, axons, etc., dopamine, okay. Then it starts connecting other things. So now you have all these millions of neural clusters that are being connected. Now, those neural clusters over time during the night create a pattern. Now Abby has a pattern of the city. It's got people, lights, cars, so she'll never forget what a city is, no matter what city she goes into, okay? Right. How many patterns can your brain carry? Well, let's look at that. The number of patterns that your brain carry is based on the number of neurons that you have. More than that, it's based on the number of connections which are connecting those neurons. The average neuron in your brain is connected to around 10,000 other neurons.
Wow.
Now, you've got about 83 billion neurons. Mm. And each of those are connected to 10,000 other neurons. Now, that's not a multiple, Kelly. That's a power. So The number of connections, the number of patterns which the brain can carry is 83 billion to the power of 10,000.
Wow.
You know what that is? 83 billion times 83 billion, 10,000 times.
Yeah.
It's a number that we cannot possibly fathom.
Right.
So, and I put this on a slide, and this is the two most important slides that I share with people. The primary element that holds us back from learning and growing and changing is what we say to ourselves. And I get teary-eyed when I say that. The primary element, Kelly, is not how we were raised. It's not what we look like. It's not the mistakes that we have made. It's what we say about how we were raised.
Mm.
It's what we say about the events in our lives. It's what we believe about the mistakes that we have made. Now, what we're going to talk about now and the rest of our time together is how to replace those beliefs. Notice I didn't say change, Kelly.
Yeah.
I never use the word change when I'm talking about the brain. Why? Because the brain hates change. It doesn't want you to change. Its job is to keep you in a comfort zone. Its job is to keep you safe. And yep. Change always involves something different. It always involves a risk. So it says things like, well, it didn't work last time, and let's just be comfortable here and the whole thing. And so let's just stay right where we are. Okay.
Yep.
So we're going to use the word replace. Replace what? Let's now talk about self-images. Okay.
Okay. Perfect.
Notice I did not say self-image, Kelly. I said self-images.
Yes.
We don't have one self-image. We have millions of them. You millions. Have a self-image for how you see yourself as a mother, as a speaker, mm-hmm. as a coach, as a cook, as a wife, as a sister, as a child, as a dancer, as a card player. You have a self-image mm-hmm. for all the millions of things that you do.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, when I learned that years ago, it was so wonderful because I realized that, yes, I'm not too good at this, but I'm really good at that. Okay. Yeah. So our self-images are based on, and here's what's wonderful, they're based on our self-talk. Our self-images are learned. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Now, we were all born with some natural dispositions. I was born a natural teacher. I've always been a teacher. When I was a kid, I used to put rocks in my backyard pretending I was teaching them. Okay. I was a weird kid. Okay. But I love teaching, but that doesn't mean I just went out there and began teaching. I had to get educated and learn how to teach. Okay.
Right.
I don't know you well enough to know what your natural gifts are, but there's some things that you do just because you love doing them.
Right.
There's something that you're naturally good at. My daughter is a natural writer. My wife is a natural organizer. I am a natural teacher. I am not a natural athlete. I am as athletic as a log, but that's all right. That doesn't bother me, okay? Because my goal is not to be a really athletic person. Okay.
Right.
So you have all these self-images and they're learned. Where do they come from? They come from your self-talk. Your self-images, Kelly, came and are coming and will come from what you are saying to yourself about yourself. Now, what have I said a few minutes ago? Most of what you say to yourself about yourself and what I say about myself is negative crap.
Right.
Until someone tells you, watch what you're saying to yourself, because what's going to happen, Kelly, is from now on, after we end this, and when you start saying negative stuff, you're going to stop and say, wait a minute,
mm-hmm.
wait a minute.
Right?
Uh-uh. I am aware now of that, and I'm just not going to say it. I'm going to replace it with something different. So when I do something really dumb, I'm not going to say I'm really dumb. I'm going to say that was a dumb thing to do. But I'm really smart. Thomas Edison was asked how it felt to fail 999 times looking for the filament of a light bulb, which turned out to be thin platinum. He said, I did not fail 999 times. I simply found 999 ways it didn't work. Kelly, that's what we're doing, especially now in the middle of the pandemic. The world has how to find things that work differently. I did not know what Zoom was 12 months ago.
Wow, really?
Now, all of my work is on Zoom.
Yeah.
I don't have to travel all over the Bay Area. I can talk to people like you, and then I get all over the world. So it's amazing, okay? Okay, so our self-images are learned, okay? And they basically they're learned from our self-talk and we can replace what we're saying to ourselves. So let me share with you how our self images are actually learned. I'll use myself as an example. Okay. The reason I did not do well in math in elementary school is because I never paid attention to the teachers because I was drawing dinosaurs. And so let's imagine I'm by myself on a Saturday morning in my room drawing a T-Rex.
Okay.
I spent an hour on this T-Rex and I'm really impressed with the car. I run to my sister, Shirley. I have three sisters, Shirley, Sally, Steve, Susie, Scott, Skip. So I run to sister Shirley. She's the expert in our house because she has her drawings on the refrigerator.
Oh,
and I'm 6 years old. And so she's 8 or 9. Okay. So I run to Shirley. I go into her room. She's playing with her friends, Barbie. And I say, look. And she looks at the picture and she says, oh, Stephen, that's really dumb. You can't draw.
Oh.
Now, Shirley has given me an opinion.
Yeah.
I can't draw, but I record that just like I recorded the stuff about the city, because the brain learns the stuff in the same way. I can't draw. I've recorded that up here during the day. Shirley says, I can't draw. Okay. So it's there. There it is. So I go back to my room. This time I draw a Stegosaurus. And I take it to Sally, who's 2 years younger than Shirley and 2 years older than I am. And I say, look. And Sally looks and she's playing with her friends and she says the same thing. You can't draw. So now I have another neural cluster saying, Sally says, I can't draw. Shirley says, I can't draw. Okay, well, I'm the only son. I'm gonna draw something for mom. Because mom thinks that there's nothing I can do wrong. So I go back to my room, take my bulletin board off, and I draw a triceratops right on the wall with crayons, paints, plaster, the most beautiful triceratops you've ever seen on the wall of my room. I'm done with it. It looks great. I run down the kitchen, come see. Mom comes down, opens the door, and she screams, oh, Stephen, what have you done? You can't draw. What did she mean, Kelly?
On the wall.
On the wall. What did I hear?
You can't draw.
I can't draw. What does my brain do? It records that.
Yeah.
Mom says, so now we have three opinions. Shirley says, Sally says, mom says. I go to bed that night. What's happened is injurious. The next one is devastating. Because Kelly, what do I say to myself over and over and over as I think through the day? I cannot draw.
Mm-hmm.
And what does my brain do? It records that. And then it creates the pattern, just like the city from Sarah. I can't draw. And I'm convinced of that. Now, let me give a little codicil here. I could learn to draw if I went to the JC. And a community college, and I could take a drawing class.
Right.
And I could learn to draw. I wouldn't be great at it, but I could learn to draw if that was important to me. But it's not important to me. My passion is to become a better teacher and speaker. Okay. But I could learn to if I want to, but it's really, really not important. But right. There's still a very, 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 very strong self-image of not being able to draw. I'll let my son-in-law be the artist. He gets paid for it more than I've ever. It's unbelievable. And he works with my daughter in Dublin, okay? So I'll let him be the artist. I'm not an artist, I'm a speaker, but I have a very, very, very strong self-image of I can't draw. Now let's go further than this. So we have a self-image for everything. We even have a self-image for meals that we cook. So I cook really great scrambled eggs. They're wonderful. The reason I use a lot of butter, okay? I cook horrible poached eggs. My poached eggs just suck big time because they're runny and yucky and horrible. As you can probably tell, I have a very high self-image for my scrambled and a very low one for my poached. So we all have these thousand self-images. We feel really good about some of them and really good about, really bad about others. Now, let's look at what we can do with our self-images, okay? here's what we've learned. We've learned that they are learned. Yeah. They're wired into your brain, just like Sarah City is wired into her brain, which means two things. And now we're looking at the work of Dr. Eric Kandel, who wrote a book called In Search of Memory. And he studied California sea slugs for 30 years. His goal is to find out how memory works. Amazing person. He died just recently. Okay. Okay. So we have these self-images that are hardwired into our brain. Okay. Which means two things. I'm sorry, I'm very emotional. Number one, you can't get rid of them. You cannot get rid of them. They're wired up there. You can't, unless you're willing to have a lobotomy. Okay. You can't get rid of them. They'll always be there.
Unless you're willing to have what?
A lobotomy.
Oh, a lobotomy.
Yeah.
Oh,
no. If you want to have a lobotomy, they'll go in there and untangle them and pull them out. So you can't get rid of them. Number two, and you already know this, Kelly, they're really, 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 really hard to change.
Yes.
Really hard to change. So what do we do? So here's what we're going to talk about today. Okay. You can't get rid of them. They're really hard to change. So let's replace them.
Yeah.
Let's replace them. How can you replace them? By replacing what you are saying to yourself about yourself. Okay. So let's apply this, because all this is kind of interesting, but we need to apply it. Because if you don't apply it, if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. Okay. So let's apply it when you screw up, like we all do.
Yes.
I mean, the day is beginning. I'll screw up this afternoon. Okay. Unfortunately, what happens when we screw up and we say to ourselves, oh my gosh, how could I have been so stupid? Unfortunately, when you ask that question, the brain says, oh, I know. Remember that dumb thing you did yesterday? And that dumb thing you did a week ago and a month ago and a year ago? And I used to say this to myself, remember how you were the slowest reader in the third grade?
No.
And we get off this list, Kelly, and we start going down the list of all the dumb things we've ever done. Now, this is really important to understand. When we do this and memorize and remember all the stupid things we've done, the brain doesn't know that those memories happened a week ago, a month ago, a year ago. You're recording them on the right side, which means it doesn't take place, it doesn't take account the time. So the brain's recording them again, along with the feelings that you had a week ago, a month ago, a year ago.
Oh no.
But it's recording them as if they happened when, Kelly?
Now, today.
Now.
Yeah.
And then you're carrying that stuff around.
Well, and you're compounding it.
You're compounding it.
Wow. Okay?
Here's the message. And I'll say it really slowly so your listeners don't miss it. Okay. And I promise not to cry.
You can cry.
You don't have to do that anymore. Starting when? Right now.
Now.
Okay, Steve, so what do you do when you screw up? Okay, let's talk about that. First of all, when you screw up, when you do something really dumb, you throw away the list. Okay? You throw away the list, and then you use three wonderful words. You know what the words are? The next time. The next time. The next time I'll do it this way and that way and this way. And when you say the next time, Kelly, you're saying three things. Ready? Number one, you're saying, hold on to your seat. This is so wonderful. There is a next time. How many next times do we get? As many as we want. Billions and trillions and gazillions. Isn't that wonderful?
That is amazing.
That is so wonderful. Number two, when you say the next time, you're saying, I'll never, ever give up. Ever. Best for last. Number three, when you say the next time, what you're really saying is, you know what, Steve? I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm still changing. I'm still screwing up. I'm still failing, but just because I fail doesn't mean I'm a failure. Back to Thomas Edison, I did not fail. I simply found what didn't work. That's what we're doing. Now, let's talk about feelings because this is touching both of our hearts.
Yeah.
And let's look at the work of Dr. Albert Ellis in a little book called The Guide to Rational Living. It's available on Amazon. It's a little tiny book, about 220 pages. It turns psychology on its ear. Okay, so yeah. Let's get into feelings.
Okay.
Where they come from. Ready? Hang on to your hat. Our feelings about ourselves, about our life, about the world, do not come primarily, not completely, but primarily do not come from how we were raised or what we look like or the mistakes or events in our lives. You know where they come from, Kelly? They come from our beliefs about how we were raised.
Oh.
Our beliefs about the mistakes that we've made. Our beliefs about the pandemic, the beliefs about being isolated, the beliefs about the events in our lives. Why is that so exciting? Because we can replace those beliefs. That's the magnificent part about the brain. You can replace them. Notice I didn't say change them again. I didn't say change. Let's not worry about the word change because as soon as you use the word change with the brain, it just gets all nervous. So, but the brain loves to create new things. It hates change, but loves to create. Okay. So when Mary retired, she was an elementary school principal, award-winning elementary school principal for about 30 years. When she retired, now she knits and crochets. And we're driving down the freeway. What are you making? Oh, I'm not sure. I'm making a cap for who knows what. But she loves to create. So the brain loves to create. Okay. Okay. So we're going to use that. Okay.
Okay.
So now we have those feelings and they're coming from primarily our beliefs. Now people say to me, Steve, I'm really not sure what I believe. There's a wonderful handle. You know what the handle is? Your self-talk.
Mm.
If you want to know what you're believing, listen to what you are saying to yourself about yourself, about your life, about whatever. That tells you what you're believing, okay?
Yep.
Here's what's so exciting. You control your self-talk. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Not how you were raised, not events in your life. You control it today and you can replace it. Is it easy? Kelly, you know it isn't. It's really hard sometimes. Why? Because you have been saying such horrible things about yourself in this particular area or that particular area all your life.
Right.
And every single time you do, your brain rewires itself and makes that a pattern. But, when you're aware of it, like you became aware of it today, you can say, wait a minute, I'm in control. I call the shots here. So let me share with you another story. When Mary was a principal, one evening we were talking and Mary said to me, I got to tell you what happened today. I said, oh, good, I love stories. I woke up this morning and I remembered I was going to deal with this parent. The biggest challenge that principals have is not the kids, it's the parents.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm going to have to deal with this horrible parent at 8:30. And she's a screamer. She's just a horrible, evil person. I'm going to have the worst day today. Now she's been coming to my seminar for years. She read my book, the whole thing. And she said, oh my gosh, listen to me. So she said, Steve, I jumped out of the bed. I was in my office, so I didn't see this. Stood next to my bed in my nightgown. And took my principal position, which is something like this or something. She does it much better. And she talked to her brain and she said, now listen.
Ooh.
Are you listening? And she said, I saw my brain kind of bobbing ethereally in front of me. The eyes got really big. And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, I'm going to have a great day. Oh my gosh. Did you hear me? And the brain got really, the eyes got really big, and the brain said, oh, okay, you're the boss. Listen, Kelly, the brain only listens to you.
Yeah.
Did you hear me?
Yeah.
What others say, we talked about this a few minutes ago, don't become a part of you until you agree with them. You're the boss. It's a captive audience up here. It only listens to you. So when Mary said to her brain, we're going to have a great day, the brain said, okay, ma'am, absolutely. And it began looking for ways to make it a great day. First of all, the parent never showed up, which is great.
Oh, that is great.
And Mary said to me that night, I had one of the best days I've had for a long time. And then she said, what you're sharing is so amazing because it really, 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 really works.
Yeah.
And it really, 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 really does. Okay. Okay. So let's go back to feelings. So primarily our feelings are coming from our beliefs. Our feelings more specifically are coming from our self-talk. They're coming from what we are saying about the pandemic and isolation and ourselves and how whatever. That's what they're coming from. Now we can replace what we're saying. Is it easy? In some areas, yes. In some areas, no. How long does it take to create these new self-images? It depends upon how long they've been there. So it's not the 21 days. That's a really interesting story. Let me tell you about Maxwell Maltz. Maxwell Maltz is the founder of psychocybernetics. Really interesting story how that came up with. This is back in the 50s. And okay. He wrote psychocybernetics. You've no doubt heard of him. He was a plastic surgeon specializing in female facial reconstruction in Manhattan back in the 50s. And he would have female patients come in who had been injured in a crash, had been burned, and he would do plastic surgery. He noticed a pattern with the patients who had had a injury for a long, 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 long time. They would come in, he would do the surgery. The surgery was successful. The wraps would come off, and yet, of course, there's purple and there's scarring, but the wrap, it was obviously a completely, he had really done a wonderful job repairing. And more than not, these female patients would look in the mirror and they would say, see, I told you it wouldn't work. They could not see what he had done.
Wow.
Until he worked with them for sometimes as long as 6 months. And then they began seeing the changes. And he realized that the difference is not here. The difference is up here. It's up there. It starts up there. So let's talk about how we can apply this to our lives. I want to get into the work of Dr. E.P. Seligman, the author of Learned Optimism, also on Amazon. Dr. Seligman of the University of Pennsylvania, I think he's still working. He did a wonderful website on positive psychology. So you can go to Google and type in positive psychology, Seligman, S-E-L-I-G-M-A-N-N. Okay. He has been studying positive psychology for 30 years. So let's review and summarize what he discovered. He discovered that you have two types of people, pessimists and optimists. And this is my own definition of pessimist. A pessimist is a person who says, life happens to me.
Mm.
And I can't help the way I was born, what I look like. This is the way it is. I'm just being accepting. I'm just being mature. I've always been this way. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm just dealing with the real world. That's called a closed box system. and it leaves no room for real growth because pessimists say this is the way it is, they might as well accept it, I'm just being mature, da, 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 okay? Optimists, however, they say, no, I can always choose to think the way I think. I can choose to replace the negative crap I'm saying to myself. So let's apply it. Years and years ago, when Mary was a principal and I was a professor, I was teaching. I was also the evening dean. So I would teach during the day and I would teach this stuff. During the day, I would go have dinner and come back and teach and run the evening school. One day I was leaving to go out to dinner and the receptionist said, your wife's on the phone. So I picked up the phone and Mary usually never called me at work. Have you ever picked up the phone, Kelly? You know something's wrong.
Yes.
You just know it. Yes. As I picked up the phone, the vibrations. And I picked up the phone. Mary was not talking. And when you get Mary near a phone, she talks. And finally, I had to say, hi. Hello? Are you there? What's wrong? I just walked out of the doctor's office. I have cancer. I need you home. I need everybody home. So I called our daughters and their husbands. We all came home and spent the day together, eating, drinking, laughing, crying, planning. She'd have to be out of work for 6 months to a year, mastectomy, corrective surgery, radiation, chemo, losing her hair, all these sorts of things. And we were all with her. We cried together, laughed together. We did a lot of drinking, but oh well. And so eventually our daughters went home and Mary and I talked. Then Mary went to sleep finally. And I went to my office, picked up two books. One is the Bible, because I'm a Christian. The other one is Learned Optimism by Seligman. So I began reviewing what he had said. Here's how optimists deal with really, really hard stuff. Number one, they isolate it. So let me give you an example. So Mary and I talked. We said, okay, here's the cancer with the mastectomy and the chemo and all the other things. But, it's not the only thing in our life. We live in Sonoma County, which is about the most beautiful place in the world. Northern California. We've been married for 40 years. Our daughters are married to men who love them even more than we do, which we never thought could possibly possible. So we are not going to let this cancer be an umbrella over the rest of our lives. That was a decision that we both made. We're not going to let it happen. That doesn't mean we're not going to deal with it, because we have to deal with it. Right. But we're going to look at the other things in our life also that are just as real as the cancer. Now, here's the exciting part. This is where neuroplasticity comes in. We locked on to that. Now, let me share with you another story that illustrates how important it is to what we lock on to. When I was a little boy, my dad taught me how to ride a bicycle, took me out to this road, took the train whistle off. He said, now, Stephen, before I give you a shove, you see that rock out there about 50 feet? Yes, Daddy. Don't run into that rock. And I wanted to really impress my dad, Kelly. You already know what happened.
I got
down on the bike. I locked onto the rock so I would not run into it. Of course, what happened?
He ran right into it.
That's the way our brain works. We locked onto isolating that cancer. And we said, this cancer is not going to completely take over our lives. We're not going to let it happen. Now, the more we said it, the more we locked onto it, the easier it was, because our brain rewires itself. So it eventually just became a mindset. This is just one part of our life. Yes, it means all these things, but there's other things that are wonderful. Okay, so that's number one. Optimists isolate. Number two, they temporalize. What does that mean? That means recognizing that life is a moving picture. I can guarantee you, Kelly, that tomorrow is going to be different from today. Tomorrow's not even going to be vaguely similar to today. And we can all say that about our life. Tomorrow's going to be completely different. And the day after that, the day after that, the day after that. So life is a moving picture. It's always moving. This is what's so important. When you feel really, really, really bad and depressed, you say, okay, yes, right now I do. But I'm not always going to be feeling this way. Because life is a moving picture. So here's what we said. A year from now, Mary's going to be cancer-free. That's the rock on the road we're locking onto. It's also called an affirmation, which we don't have time to get into, but my book gets into that, okay? So we said, that's what we're locking onto. Mary's going to be cancer-free. How do we know? We don't know. That's what the doctor says, but we're not, can't be obstructed. But that's what we're locking onto. And our brain says, what? Okay, true, don't care. All I care is what you tell me. You say it, I believe it. You lock onto it, I'll do everything I can to make it true in your life. So that's what we locked onto. Okay, so we temporalized it. Number three, optimists say, I always have a choice to think differently. So that's what we did. We said, okay, this cancer is a blip in the road. Mary's only 55 when it happened, okay? It's a blip in the world. We'll get through it. We'll share with others how we did it, da, da, da. And that's what we did, okay? The following year, Mary was cancer-free, yay. And the year after that, the year after that, the year after that. And then she called me, Kelly, but this time it was different. I picked up the phone. And it was Mary, but this time it was completely different from before. Hi, hi, what's going on? I just walked out of the doctor's office. They found something. How are you doing? You know what, Steve? I'm doing all right. How? Because I made it through last time, which means I can make it through this time. And she did.
That's awesome.
So let's apply this some more. If our feelings are primarily coming from not how we were raised, not events in life, but what we say about how we were raised, what we say, we can apply that to anything. So 2019 was an amazing year. In the beginning, I discovered I had cancer. I had cancer up here, all around my scalp up here. I discovered all at the same time I had cataracts and diabetes. Oh, and then the end of the year, I discovered I had advanced heart disease. My mitral valve was flipping all over the place, okay? So for the cancer, they did a surgery. They took the scalp off. And they did some plastic surgery, and I'm cancer-free.
Yay!
And for the diabetes, they had to completely change my lifestyle, and I've lost 30 pounds. For the cataracts, they replaced the lens with corrective lenses, and I've got two glasses here that I don't have to use anymore because I've got corrective. And for the heart disease, I had open heart surgery in 2020, and my blood pressure, I took it yesterday, was 123/79, which is really
good. That's so good.
Okay. Here's the point though. My feelings didn't come from the cancer or the cataracts. They came from what I was saying about the cancer and the cataracts. Why is that so wonderful? Because we do not have to be a victim of our feelings. Our feelings aren't coming willy-nilly from out there someplace. They're primarily coming from what we are saying to ourselves about ourselves. What does that mean, Kelly? It means that we can be in control. Is it easy? Of course not. Because life can be really tough. Life can bring really hard stuff. Life can lead us to tears, but our brain listens to us. Our brain accepts what we say. It believes what we are saying to ourselves about ourselves. Now, let's apply that. We've already applied to where we can do when we screw up. Right. We throw away the list and the next time. Mm-hmm. What about, and this is a study from Stanford University called The Effort Effect back in 1975. People can Google it. What they discovered about when we do something really, 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 really well and people compliment us, most often we pass over our successes.
Yeah.
Too quickly, too lightly for them to ever become a part of who we are. So when people say, good job, so often, Kelly, we say, oh, not really. Oh, it could have been better. I mean, I was part of a team, but I'll do a better job. Thank you. I don't want to be egotistical. That's egotistical. So I don't really think so, but thanks very much. But oh, no, 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 no. Okay, Kelly, what have we learned this morning? When you say no, 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 what's your brain going to say? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true? Exactly. Don't care.
Oh.
All I care is what you tell me. So those compliments fall to the floor.
Yeah.
Which is not only sad, Kelly, but oh my goodness, what a waste.
Right.
So hold on to your seat. Here we go. Ready?
Ready.
So from now on, with the new life that began 1 second ago, when people compliment you, you look at them and you smile and you say, thanks. I know. Now, I was sharing this with about 300 Kaiser physicians and hospital staff down in Southern California a number of years ago at the Hilton in Huntington Beach. And when I said, thanks, I know, in the ballroom, the whole ballroom just broke up and roared. They thought that was the funniest thing they'd ever heard. But Kelly, they love me. They love me. They bought my book. They signed up for my online seminar. One doctor flew his entire family to Northern California to hear me speak. It was amazing. When I'm driving back to LAX, the freeway in Los Angeles, I was so excited, I almost drove off the freeway. I was so excited. So I said, okay, I need to slow down. So I stopped at a Chevron, got a tuna sandwich and a Coke. And when the car was gassing up, I was alone. Nobody saw me do this. I looked in the passenger mirror of the car. I looked at myself and I said, you are the most amazing speaker. You really are. And what did my brain say, Kelly? Yeah.
Okay.
But here's what it also said, and this is from the work of Seligman. And don't miss this. It also said, ready? Here we go. It also agreed with me, but then it said, and Steve, you could even be better. It opened up the gate. And I said, you know what? If I can do this, I bet I could do this. And I could do this. And I'll get rid of these slides and change these slides here and put this over here and turn the computer off here. And da, da, da. I got all these wonderful ideas to be a better speaker. And then I found myself speaking all over the world. India, America, everything. I mean, I've been everywhere. And I never expected that. It right. started, however, with what I was saying to myself about myself. So here's the point, okay? Let's go back. When someone says, good job, you look at them and you smile and you say, you know what? That makes me feel really nice. Thank you for taking the time to tell me. And then when you're by yourself, you wallow in your success like a pig in slop. Wallow in it. Now I have a wonderful observation. Why do we have to wait, Kelly, for other people to tell us how wonderful we are? We don't have to. We can say it to ourselves. We can wallow in it. And the brain says, okay, here's the exciting part. You keep saying that. What is the brain doing? It's rewiring itself to where you're saying, I'm amazing. And your brain is saying, yes, you really are. It's rewiring yourself. And here's the next point. Ready? You begin to like yourself. Have you ever noticed that people who like themselves are just wonderful to be around?
Yes.
In contrast to people who don't?
Yes.
You begin to say, you know what? I'm a really neat person. And the brain says, yeah, you really are. So let's look at one last story that summarizes the whole thing.
Okay. Awesome.
I was on my way to work one morning, waiting for the light to change in Yolanda Avenue in Santa Rosa, which is 60 miles north of San Francisco. And a kid came out to my car in a very, 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 very fancy new car, looked like my little Toyota. And I knew what was going to happen. And the light changed. He went peeling out in front of me, roaring up the freeway, passing everyone. As I watched him passing everyone on the freeway, I had this epiphany. How many cars are right in front of him? Millions. How many cars are behind him? Millions. So maybe it's not a matter of how fast you get there. Maybe, Kelly, it's a matter of you're going in the right direction. But Kelly, even when we go in the right direction, sometimes we just run out of gas. Sometimes we get a flat tire. Sometimes we even lose our way. But Kelly, you know what? We can buy some more gas. We can replace the tire.
Right.
We can get a map.
Yeah.
And what's so wonderful about the brain is the whole time the brain's saying, oh, okay. Is it true?
Doesn't matter.
I don't care. All I care about is what you tell me. You say it, I believe it. You lock onto it, you know what I will do. I'll do everything I can to make it true in your life. Wow. Now, how do we make this a part of the way we think? Number one, I have a wonderful book called Making Your Mind Magnificent. It's available on Amazon.com. Number two, I have an online seminar, which I gave for many years in Silicon Valley, which is usually $297. I've lowered it to $49. And if your listeners are interested in that, please email me at StevenC, StevenC, at sbcglobal.com. Number three, if you just want to talk to me, just email me and I'll call you on the phone and we'll chat.
Love it.
Because this message is just such a wonderful message. And I want to get it out to as many people as I can.
Thank you so much.
Kelly, thank you so much for having me.
You were such a beautiful, easy interview. You just flow with your knowledge. I'm so glad that you came on today.
Thank you, Kelly. It's been a joy.
It's been amazing.
Good.
So I will put all of your links in the show notes for people to find. Everyone that's listening, please go connect with him. Connect with Stephen. He's amazing.
Thank you.
And those of you that can't see the video, we both cried several times.
We both cried. Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah.
When I had my open heart, I found myself crying a lot. A friend of mine who also had open heart said, you'll cry a lot after the surgery, because they have to get in there, break your heart to get it repaired.
That makes sense.
And it makes sense. And it's so deeply in there but I have a new heart now. So thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Yeah. I thank the Lord. Wake up in the morning. Oh my gosh. I've got another day. That's exciting. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love your attitude. I just love you. You're awesome.
Oh, Kelly, thank you. Let's keep in touch, promise.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. I have so many other things I could share. Goals that work.
Yes. I think I'd like to have you back.
Motivations that work. There's so many other things where our self-images, just there's some, so maybe we can talk again.
Yes, this will be episode one of you, and we will have more to come.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you. I know that sounds corny, but.
No, it doesn't. I do. I love you. I feel a connection with you.
Good. Yay. Good.
All right. Well, this was amazing. Thanks for being on. Everyone, thanks for listening. And I will bring Steve back someday soon.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Well, everybody have an amazing week. Watch for new episodes every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. And I will see you all next Monday.
There you go.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to my episode today. In the show notes, you will find links to today's guests or links or anything I have mentioned, including my Facebook group, my book, and upcoming events. Now, if you want to be at my next retreat, where we will break arrows with our throats and walk on fire, the upcoming one is in June of 2022. So check that out. I will put the link for that in my show notes. Also, we can sign you up for any kind of coaching program, from breakthrough coaching to becoming a speaker to learning how to manifest. So those can all be found on my website, and I'll put the link in the show notes too. So thanks for being a part of this community. Come join the Facebook group and learn how to manifest all of your dreams. I will see you guys next time. Bye.